The following program is brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice, and all economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal. Any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any person for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax, and penalties may be imposed on such persons, and each listener should seek advice from their own tax advisor, legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice. Nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show. It is Independence Day weekend, one of my favorite holiday of the year. Big 4th of July display at my house. Lots of people will come over. It's just going to be a great weekend. So I hope everyone has a very safe and happy 4th of July weekend. We're going to have a good show today. Eric Geisler, our fixed income guru and our in-house economist, will be with me in just a few minutes. We're going to obviously talk about British decision to leave the EU. Last week's show, we kind of assumed that they would probably vote to stay. That's the way it looked like it was leaning. Markets sold off, then they came back. I want to get Eric's take on all that and where we go from here. We just heard about those jobs numbers from the news feed that a lot of people are applying for unemployment benefits. So we got a lot to talk about. And then later we're going to be talking about some specific ideas on how to save taxes in retirement. So you definitely want to stick around for the entire show. Also, just so you know, we now are available on iTunes. So if you go to iTunes and search Your Money for David Hayes, you can get it in a podcast. We used to do that, then we took it off. Now we're back doing it again, thanks to Jim Ritter, our very capable producer. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by Bloomington Affordable Self Storage. Reclaim the clutter areas of your home with help from Bloomington Affordable Self Storage. It's over on 17th Street, newly remodeled, 24-hour on-site management, offering truck rental too. Call 812-339-4221. I mentioned this last week, but the U.S. Social Security trustees announced just a couple of days ago, actually, that the trust fund will be backing payments of the Social Security's office. They say here trust fund's going to be zero by 2035. But here was the interesting part. They basically started doing this some years ago, and I used to do all these public workshops, and then we would talk about how it's going to be exhausted, and then only 77% of every benefit will be promised at that time will be paid. And back 7 years ago, they predicted it would be 2042. This comes from the Social Security Trustees 2016 report, when it would be depleted. That was just 7 years ago. Now it's, it's moving quick in the wrong direction. Medicare, per the 2016 report, the trust fund supporting Medicare Part A, which is the hospital insurance, is projected to go to zip by 2028. And this comes from By the Numbers. They say that a slight increase, a 0.73% increase in Medicare payroll taxes would actually cure the problem. I'm not sure that people would want that increase in tax. You saw this probably, that Puerto Rico is facing default on their bonds or general obligation bonds coming due Friday, July 1st. But then President Obama did sign a bill that enables the Commonwealth to restructure its $70 billion, that's with a B, debt load. Puerto Rico and agencies owe about $2 billion of principal and interest payments coming up, and they basically said, hey, we ain't going to pay it. We don't have the money. Otherwise, we're going to have to shut hospitals down and things like that. So not real sure how that'll all pan out, but I hope it certainly doesn't set a precedence for future states. I saw that the only state, so let's see, I was looking at this. I thought it was pretty interesting. The Commonwealth has $13 billion of general obligation debt. And the default on the securities would be the first failure from a state-level borrower on its direct debt since Arkansas back in 1933. This comes from Investment News. Beware, retirement calculators show dramatically different results. Studies show public available retirement calculators should be taken at face value. Calculators used by investors to gauge their probability of retirement success may not actually be good gauges of that success. Comparing the output from several different retirement planning programs shows a huge disparity and underpin how investors and advisors should use them more as just a guide, take them at face value, and you should really dig into this stuff. The conclusions come from a courtesy of a number of different sites that are very well known, places like Prudential, Principal, Vanguard Group, T. Rowe Price. They said that this study said there was a 60% variance in monthly income projections and even a higher 85% in the suggested retirement goals of these calculators. The 12 planners we examined, they said they examined for this study, all provided dramatically different results in terms of intuitiveness, comprehensiveness, and overall quality. These disparities basically are going to lead to confusion among investors, maybe giving people more security than what they should have. So basically, beware if you're out there calculating your own retirement income. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by our own Eric Giesler of CFCI. We'll be talking about the Britain's vote to leave the EU, how it affected the markets, and why it bounced back so quickly. When where do we go from here? And then long term, what are the outlook for the U.S. economy? You know, we have low interest rates, which typically indicate low growth. We have low inflation. We have jobs numbers that are coming out that aren't that hot. So all of that and more with Eric Giesler. When we come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I'm not much of a selfie taker, but I did take a selfie right before the program started, put it on our Facebook page, and my caption is, David just hanging out waiting for the show to start at 6 p.m. while Sean Hannity is shouting in the background, Happy Independence Day. Check that out on Comprehensive Financial's Facebook page. Someone else who I can pretty much guarantee has never taken a selfie of himself, Eric Giesler, joins me now live on the radio. Eric, I'm just betting that you've never taken a selfie.
No, I have not. And
don't intend
thanks
to.
For advertising. I'm not very good for advertising, am I?
Well, as they say, we have faces for radio in our office. No, I'm just teasing.
Yeah.
Eric, let's talk a little bit. So last week I was in Cleveland. I called in. Doug was anchoring the show, and we were talking about the possibility of Britain leaving the EU. And at that point, it appeared that the polls were pointing to the fact that they were probably going to stick. Well, then the vote came out. They didn't, and the markets sold off hard. They sold off again on Monday. They turned around pretty quickly and recovered and ended June on a pretty positive note from an S&P 500 standpoint. Tell us a little bit, before we get into the economy and the market and things like that, what motivated Britain to actually bring up a vote to leave the EU?
Well, I think it's more than just about Britain. Obviously, I think you have mentioned in the past a number of things like immigration and some of the economic policies that the political and the experts want to tell us. And I think it's a rejection of those. I think there's a big disconnect between what we call experts and political and business professionals and the average Joe out there on the street. I just think there's a big disconnect, and I think that's true in our country. I think that's true worldwide. I think one of the outcomes of their vote, I think, is that you'll see more of them. Whether they turn out in the same conclusion, I don't know, but I think you will see a larger voice being given to the average Joe than the experts or the political elites that want to guide us.
Certainly,
I think there's a big disconnect,
yeah.
And I think the driving force behind that, and I hope I'm not stealing your thunder a little bit, but we've been in a period of very low growth. It appears that a few or a small percentage of people are really benefiting from this slow growth that we've had for the last eight years or so, and I think the average Joe is just kind of tired. Hey, we got to try something different.
Very anti-establishment vote. In fact, from by the numbers, 72% of eligible voters in the UK came out to vote. The highest we've ever had for a presidential election was in 1960, when about 64-65% of our eligible voters came out. Eric, let's talk, when we talk about something else that I think is pretty interesting. I saw something that said the number one searched question on Google in Europe was, what is the EU? So it just kind of shows you that the folks over there didn't necessarily, the average person, maybe didn't even know what the EU was or what it stood for. But I think that anyone that lives here in America, when you look at the statistics, I actually saw something recently that said that less than 30, there was a good number of Americans that cannot name our three branches of government. So it shouldn't surprise us that the number one search thing is what is the EU over there. And we can compare this to similar things that we had never faced before, like the fiscal cliff not too long ago, the EU debt crisis back in 2012. So immediately the market sort of rebounded. Why did the market all of a sudden have a change of heart?
Well, I think the word that I would use is risk. And I think that right now the market only cares about risk in the sense that they can identify it. They're not worried about things that are potentially going to happen 6, 9, 12 months from now. They're talking about what risk am I willing to take today. And if you put our market, our stock market, and our bond market, and in our capital markets, it relative to the rest of the world, we seem to have the least amount of risk right now. And you and I have talked about this many, many times. We're in an age of negative interest rates and all of these quantitative easings that central banks around the world are using to try and stimulate the economy, and they're not working. And I think the markets are only caring about what they know today. They'll worry about the risks later if they really come to fruition. It's kind of interesting, in my opinion, that we, leading up to that vote, and certainly subsequent to that vote, there's been this loud voice of, you know, the world's coming to an end, so to speak, and there's going to be a huge recession in England, and our market is just going to fall off the table, and none of that has come true. And I think that once again, the wisdom of those experts has kind of come to fruition, and they're no better at their crystal ball than you and I are.
Anytime, folks, anytime the majority of people or the consensus, you get everyone on the same page saying this is what's going to happen, it rarely, rarely does. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how this will long-term, we think, affect the U.S. economy, if at all, and what does the GDP rely on here in the U.S. from Great Britain, and then also the big worry, the big cascade effect, the big, big, big elephant in the room. If they have a successful exit and others follow, what will that have as an impact on the world economy? So more with Eric Geisler, our fixed income manager over at CFCI and chief compliance officer as well. We'll be back with Eric. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So we got numbers that came out this week that said more people are applying for unemployment benefits here locally. I mean, locally here in the U.S. The Brits leave or vote to leave the EU. No real consensus from economists on how this will affect the U.S. long term. But the U.S. GDP from the standpoint of relying on the Brits is only about 0.31%, so not that big of a deal. Globally, the Brits account for about 4.8% of GDP. Eric Geisler is with me on the phone. Eric, it seems like one of the biggest disadvantages to at least our current state of the economy is that the dollar's been strengthening, which could potentially make it more difficult for our multinational companies to sell abroad, which could hurt their earnings, which could affect the stock market. But really, the bigger worry is the cascade effect. So Britain leaves, let's say, and it's successful, and then all of a sudden, you know, you say, well, France is going to be out, Spain's going to be out, Germany's going to be out, and then you basically just have a few countries staying there holding the bag. What is the big worry, the big cascade effect, if the European Union starts to ravel?
Well, I think it is the big worry, because it's not only those that are supporting from an economic perspective, the Germanys, the France, the Britons that are supporting. It's also the ones that actually needed the help, whether that's Greece, whether that's Spain, whether that's Italy. I think that is the bigger effect. Right now, though, the market doesn't seem to care about those. They haven't seen a plan. They haven't seen a whole lot of the discussion about how all of this, how England would actually leave the EU, but the market right now doesn't seem to care about those risks. Those are unknowns, and they're only worried about the knowns right now. But I do think it is the biggest risk that's out there. You rightly pointed out the risk to our economy is the effect of currency, and we continue to be a very strong currency. There's a lot of commodities that are dollar-based, and all of those seem to come back to us. Now, that could hurt earnings here in the United States, but I think you've also rightly pointed out that it's a pretty small percentage.
That's what they said about the mortgage crisis, too. Don't you recall? Oh, those subprime mortgages, they're a small percentage of the mortgage market.
But in terms of in terms of how England is going to affect as a standalone state, we're still going to trade with them. It's not like we're going to go to zero. It's not like Europe's going to go to zero with doing business with England. So there will be, you know, a continuum of trading with our partner. You've heard a number of politicians come out and talk about the relationship and how important it is. So it's not going away. Is it going to slow down? Potentially. But once again, I don't see the market. I don't see the market caring right now. Right now, they're only worried about what they know, and all they know is that they've voted to leave, and whatever that turns out to be, they'll deal with it when it happens.
Well, that's probably what it should be. Yeah, it's been an interesting, though, week as you watch the dollar get stronger. Then you see commodities go up. You see gold that's been on a pretty good rally. That's usually different than that. I mean, if the dollar weakens, they go
up. It's usually the opposite.
Yeah,
right?
Usually the opposite.
They move
of that.
In opposite directions.
You have the equity markets that recover at the same time. The 10-year Treasury is down that 1.4 range. I think the 30-year is out around 2.6 or 2.7 or something crazy. So all what normally does happen when this happens, that happens, just seems like that was all thrown out the window this past week.
Well, I think that the risk-free rates around the world came down. But the risk premium that is added on is, as you know, the risk premium that's been added on actually stayed the same. So in terms of absolute returns, it really didn't move at all.
Yeah, pretty interesting stuff, actually.
Yes.
Advice to people listening who, you know, they're going to be getting their 401k statements. They're going to be getting their investment statements next week or next 2 weeks. For people out there, I mean, they probably think that, man, this month was terrible. And they're going to open their statements and maybe be pleasantly surprised it wasn't as bad as what they maybe thought it was going to be.
Yeah, the S&P is up for the year. It's up over 2%. I think it's around 230.
Yeah, and the Nasdaq's, I think, down.
2.3%.
Yeah, right. Yeah. In the bond market's been pretty solid.
I think the big lesson to be learned is don't overreact and stick to your plan.
Well, I heard Rod talking to some people off the cliff on Friday, and I actually directed a few people to him on Monday as well. And he had a really good direct saying to people: never, ever, ever make decisions in a panic mode. Don't sell into a panic. Volatility, I heard him say, volatility is actually reasonable, which means in most cases the sell-off will be short-lived. I heard him talk about that on Glass in the Morning, and you know, I know our crystal ball is definitely foggy and broke like everyone else's, but that was very good advice. And fortunately, just everyone took it, and they hung in there, and here we are at the end of the month, and it's 4th of July weekend coming up, and why not be just super happy, right, Big E?
Yes, sir.
That's right. Be grateful for what we have, for sure. Hey, we'll let you go. I know you're busy. I'll talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, and have a great 4th of July. See you next week.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye.
Folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got a lot of great things to talk about. I had I just love sharing success stories, and I've always kind of been a tax guy. I always joke that I know a lot about two things: one's taxes and one's real estate, because I've paid a lot in tax, so I've learned how not to do that anymore. And then I've also lost money on real estate, so I've learned not to do that anymore. But the fact is, I love when someone comes in and I'm able to really, really improve a situation. This is someone who's been a client for a long time. And we set it down, and he was a little worried about the fact that he might run out of money down the road. I mean, he's been a client. I was thinking he's been a client for probably, I don't even know, so long where, you know, maybe it's the 90s. So he was through the, you know, Asian currency meltdown, the Russian bond default, the tech bubble and burst, the worst financial crisis in our lifetime, the Great Recession of 2008. He's 85 years old. You know, he's running some models. Things are costing more. Then I'm going to run out of money. So I said, well, let's take a look at this. So we really dug into it deep. And when I come back, I'm going to share the story how we were able to save him $7,000 a year of income taxes by what I talked about a few weeks ago, the tax torpedo. By reducing some reportable income, you can reduce other reportable income, which can lower your taxes significantly. And then also, I want to talk about life insurance a little bit. A few weeks ago, we had Ed Slott on, and we talked about the value of life insurance as a wealth transfer tool. I'm going to use some real specific examples, some real life examples that I just ran across in the last couple weeks that I thought might be helpful to you. And then later on, we're going to talk about understanding the importance of estate planning. You're going to, again, use some real examples, but what are the documents that you need? How do they work? What things you should put in there, you shouldn't put in there? Beneficiaries, all that stuff and more. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Happy 4th of July weekend again, everybody. It's going to be a good one. Hey, quick reminder, we are now up on iTunes. So if you go to iTunes and search Your Money with David Hayes, it will pop up. We've got a couple of episodes up. The Ed Slott program was loaded up, and then last week's program. So just, you know, go on and listen to the whatever they're called. You know what I'm trying to say. Podcast. And then always on WGCLradio.com, great way to listen. And the show, of course, replays every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. So anyway, have a great weekend. I think it's going to be a fabulous one. I had a client in this week. He is 85 years old, has been a client forever and ever and ever. And I mentioned in the last segment, you know, this guy's been through a lot. He, from an investment standpoint, you know, you go back in the 90s, we had that Asian currency meltdown, the Russian bond default, the tech bubble bursting, the Great Recession of 2008, and he's still kicking. He's 85. And a little concerned about, you know, maybe running out of money sometime in his 90s, and we modeled some things out. And yeah, I mean, he was probably, at the pace he was headed, going to run out maybe mid-90s or so. So, you know, he knew about it, was concerned about it, but not overly concerned about it. But I said, let's take a look at this. Pulled his taxes out, and he had been taking out of his retirement account about $56,000 a year. Now, when you take it from a retirement account, it's 100% reportable income. It's 100% taxable to you. Well, then I went down the line and said, well, golly, he's bringing in $33,000 of Social Security, but 85% of that's taxable, so $28,000 of it was taxed. So you had the $56,000, $28,000, some other little miscellaneous things here and there. And then I got to talking. Well, I come to find out he had about $115,000, $120,000 in the bank. And it was just sitting there, not really doing anything, earning anything, but it was all after-tax money. So I brought up the idea, hey, what if we just took the RMD, the minimum distribution from the retirement account, and then you used money from the bank to live off of, and then we let your IRA grow some, and it should reduce your taxes. He said, that sounds like a good idea. Let's take a look. So I had him back in this week, and basically what we did, we took the $56,000 all the way down to his RMD, which was $27,000. That's a $29,000 reduction in reportable income. Then what happened is that caused the taxable Social Security to go way down. So his, instead of $28,000 of taxable Social Security, it went all the way down to $10,000. So we were able to basically knock off the $29,000, and we knocked off the $18,000 of taxable income. So $47,000 now of taxable income gone. That saved him $7,000. He'll get a $7,000 refund this year because we caught it early. And I mentioned, you know, I think last week, this is a great time of year to do tax planning because it's not too late to do something. So in his case, he was only like $1,000 away from having his RMD met. We're going to shut that sucker off. He'll start living off of his bank account. And then next year when he does his taxes, he'll get $7,000 back. Well, you start compounding the growth on the retirement account because of money we're not taking out, the lower cash drag, you don't have to keep as much money liquid, the tax savings of $7,000 a year. I haven't done the model yet, but I know for sure that's going to add on at least a couple, 2 or 3 years, right? So that should give him a lot more comfort. So he left, and I just felt really, really good about it. He did too, and I thought I'd share the story with all of you. All right, let's talk a little bit about insurance. Ed Slott last week talked about how life insurance, the tax-free treatment of life insurance, is the best tax code alive. It's the best thing. IRS code 7702, the tax-free treatment of life insurance. If it's a cash value life insurance, you know, that's fine. But I'm going to talk about the death benefit side. I mean, we all have a one-on-one chance of dying, right? So that's why you own life insurance, to own it when you need it the most, which is when you die. So a lot of people will buy term insurance to cover for a particular term. But the reason term insurance is so cheap is less than 1% of term policies end in a death claim. So that's why if you have a permanent thing you want to cover, then you buy permanent insurance. And you can buy it in all kinds of shapes and sizes. It's not necessarily going to cost you a lot more. I mean, it's just, you got to look at it. But here's the thing. We had someone in recently who had a pension, a nice pension, $2,400 a month was their pension. And they were married. And if they were willing to take $400 less per month, so knock it down to $2,000, then the spouse would be able to receive 66 2/3% of that pension, of the $2,000, if that person passed away, the pensioner passed away first. Well, I got to thinking about that, and we've used this strategy for years and years and years. It's called self-insuring your pension or pension maximization, because that $400 they keep, that's a cost of insurance. That is a premium to cover your spouse if you die. So the spouse was only going to get about $1,330 a month at 66 and two-thirds of $2,000. So I said, well, what if we took that $400? Why don't you take the $2,400 a month, but then we take the $400 a month and we buy life insurance? And you buy life insurance enough to cover your spouse if you die. And don't forget, life insurance is tax-free. Your pension's not. Another big benefit. Number two benefit, what if your spouse died before you? If you don't, you might have a springing provision that gets you back to $2,400, but still that was you know, money lost in the pension. Now that life insurance will go to somebody. It's going to go to your kids, your grandkids, somebody. What if you die close together? You know, you die of a broken heart. The life insurance goes to someone, tax-free. So we looked at it, and it ended up we only needed to buy $287,000 of life insurance. The way I did that calculation, I took a 25-year life expectancy at a 2.8% rate of return. You don't want to be freaky and crazy with your rates of return, and took $1,330 a month and backed into it and said, okay, we need $287,000. We don't even need that much because of the fact that it's tax-free. But anyway, that's what we went with. We had $4,800 to spend, $400 a month, and we're able to get this insurance for him. I mean, what a great plan. So people always think, well, I never need life insurance when I retire. Well, there are some really, really useful things that life insurance can be used for. I use it as a wealth replacement tool a lot, too. You know, I have a situation right now with a lady who has a pretty decent estate, pretty decent size estate, probably over the average in this area, and has an IRA and then has some trust money as well, and was just taking minimum distributions. Well, her kids are very successful, high income earners, and really it's better for her to take the tax hit now than her kids to take the tax hit. So we started accelerating the distributions on the retirement plan. She's still not going to pay a lot of tax. She doesn't need a lot. And we shifted a significant amount of lump sum of money into a life insurance policy for her. She was able to get 3 times the deposit in death benefits. She still has her money in a policy growing. She can still access it if she needs it. But now, whenever she passes away, and by the way, we're going to put the policy in the kids' names. I'm going to come back to gifting here in just a few minutes. Then when she passes away, hopefully the IRA is completely done. The tax-free money from the life insurance, $3 million, goes to the kids, tax-free, inheritance-free, all everything free, 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 free. And then the trust money receives a stepped-up cost basis, and they don't pay any taxes on that either. So you're able to transfer, you know, by that time, heck, it should be a $7 or $8 million estate to the kids completely tax-free. So there's so many ways and different things to think about. Don't just be closed-minded and say, oh, my goodness, I would never own life insurance in retirement. You can use it for long-term care expenses. All of these policies, new policies out here are so dynamic. And also, remember, and maybe I've told you this before, but about every 14 years, they update life expectancy tables. Well, they were updated in 2014, so all these insurance companies are starting to update their mortality tables, and that means the cost of insurance is going down. If you bought a policy a few years ago, you probably used 2000 mortality tables. If it was before that, it would have been like 1986 mortality tables. So, you know, if you've owned a policy for 20, 30 years, you might be on 1986 life expectancy tables. You could possibly even upgrade at an older age and still not pay that much more. But a lot of these policies have long-term care riders, and I love this. I've got one for my mom. I mean, I have one myself. So where the life insurance, yeah, for sure, when you die, it's there. But if you need it for long-term care, it can be there for that too. So most of the policies, you can access up to about 2% of the death benefit per month until the policy is exhausted. So if you have a $100,000 policy, it's $2,000 a month. Again, it comes out tax-free, and it's mailbox money. So you can use it for whatever you want. A lot of the long-term care policies, no matter what form they're in, are there to pay for skilled care or for licensed care. Sometimes the in-home is a little bit regulated. So this is truly money in my mailbox. You could pay up anyone you want to come take care of you, your mom, your grandma, whatever. So there are definitely uses for life insurance in retirement. And I just wanted to make sure I got that plug in. So all of you life guys out there, I know you're giving me a high five over the air, but listen, it's the truth. It's the way it works. So, and I've become a huge believer in it and a proponent of using it as a wealth transfer, wealth replacement tool, a tax tool. I mean, like Ed said, make something that's taxed forever, never taxed ever again by using that. So don't get crazy. Be careful. But I just wanted to give you the info. Hey, let's take another break. When we come back, let's talk about the importance of proper estate planning. You know, in our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults age 50 and older, I always have to throw that in, we spend a lot of time on estate planning. And, you know, most people spend more time planning their vacations than they do planning their estate. I've been going through my estate planning process, updating it. And I can guarantee you my wife spent more time planning our destined vacation than I'll be spending time on this. But you know what? It's just the way it goes. So when we come back, we become some helpful hints. And also talk about gifting. When I mentioned giving that life policy away to the kids, how does that work whenever it's $1 million? I mean, doesn't someone pay tax? Is someone going to pay tax on the gift? Is the kids going to pay tax? I'm going to pay tax? Well, when we come back, I'll tell you why the answer to that is no. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Get me talking about planning concepts, I get carried away. I was looking up, oh my gosh, I ran over that segment, but hey, that's just the way it goes. Hey, let's talk a little bit about estate planning while I've got you captive here. I was talking with some folks this week, and they just wanted a basic understanding of estate planning, and I gave them a copy of the book and pointed out where they could read it in Chapter 7. But I talked about wills, and we talked about trust and powers of attorney and healthcare representative, living will, all that kind of stuff. And I'm a real adamant about the power of attorney not being a springing power of attorney, which that simply means that if I'm incapacitated, then it springs into action. I've been a big fan, and I know Tom Bunger being on the show is also a big fan of, if you're going to give someone the power of attorney, just give it to them. Give it to them outright. Because when you need the power of attorney, the last thing you want to do is try to get two, you know, physicians to deem them incapacitated or incompetent. And then, I mean, you need it. When you need it, you need it. So I always say to people, do it. And then also, been continually reminding people that if you have young adult children, like Angela in my office has two kids, one's 21, I think Abby's 19, you know, you probably should have a healthcare representative in place for them, because if they are in an accident, if they are in, you know, something happens to them and you want to get healthcare information, I mean, they're an adult now. So those, all those crazy HIPAA rules, and I don't know all the details, but I know that a good friend of mine had a hard time getting information about his son who was hit by a car in California when he was 23 years old. So I would do that. I would also become a power of attorney for my kids. I mean, my young adult children, once they get married or whatever, then maybe they move on. But in the meantime, I think it's really important to have those things. The other thing I was going to talk about briefly is gifting, because a lot of people get this screwed up. I was mentioning in the previous segment that there was a $1 million deposit, literally $1 million into a policy. That policy was going to provide $3 million of death benefit. The $1 million was going to be in indexed accounts and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, we want to put that in the kids' names or in a trust for the kids. But when you give someone something, then that's considered a gift. And people always assume that if I give more than $14,000 to any one person, that somebody's going to pay a tax. You're going to pay the tax. I'm going to pay the tax. But the answer is no, and here's the why. We all have a over $5 million lifetime gift tax exclusion amount. I think it's like $5 million to something now. It's a lot. So the way the $14,000 comes into play is that if I give more than $14,000 away to any one person in any one year, then the excess goes against my $5,250,000 or $280,000 or whatever that number is. If I give under $14,000, then it doesn't touch my $5 million plus lifetime amount. So for most average people, it doesn't make that big of a difference, because you probably don't have a five, or if you're married, a $10 million estate. It just doesn't make any difference. Now, in this case, this person may end up with a larger estate. So we'll have to file a gift tax return to at least acknowledge the fact that that's the case, that we gave away more, and then we're going to take a hit on our big lifetime gift tax exclusion amount. But keep in mind that 5.28 or whatever it is continues to go up each year based on inflation. So keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So when it comes to giving money, if your mom or grandma or someone is always giving you 10, it used to be 10, then 12, now 14,000 a year, and they think that if they give more than that, that someone's going to pay some tax, the answer is no, it's not going to happen. They can give more than that for sure. The other thing that I've really been hammering hard lately are the qualified charitable distributions. This is a no-brainer, I think, for almost everyone over 70 and a half that has a retirement account and also gives to any charities, whether it's a church, whether it's CASA, whether it's whatever, it doesn't make any difference. It's a qualifying charity. You give money directly from your IRA to the charity. You can give up to $100,000 per year. It satisfies your minimum distributions. It's not taxable to you either. It's a great way to do it. So I this past week we had someone who was basically taking money from her retirement account, putting in her checking account, writing the check to the church. So we figured out she's giving about $6,000 a year to the church. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to write a check to the church from the IRA for $6,000. not reportable to you as income. It helps satisfy the distribution requirements. And then she didn't have to take hardly anything from her accounts to be able to live. The other thing that I always talk to people about is the stepped-up cost basis. A lot of people get, you know, want to give stuff away because they, you know, they are misinformed or doing it for the wrong reasons. But, you know, hey, I want to give money, I want to put all this in my kid's name. Why? Well, I don't want the government to get it. It's usually the answer that I get. But a lot of folks don't understand that anytime you do something, every time you give something, you give something up. So in this case, this person had some stock they've owned for years and years and years, and they wanted to give it to the kids. Well, but didn't want them to sell it. It happened to be Eli Lilly. Well, when they give that stock to the kids, not only do they get the stock at the current value, but they also inherit the cost basis. So in this case, the Lord knows how much they paid for it. It wasn't much. It's like 50 years ago. So let's just say that I got a stock from my dad. It was worth $100, and he paid $10 for it. And then I eventually sell it. I'm going to pay capital gains on the difference between the 10 and the 100. But if dad holds that stock because he wants to hold it, he passes away with that stock then transfers to me at a stepped-up cost basis, or the current value, $100. I then sell it, and then I pay no income taxes whatsoever. So just by having things properly structured in a good, solid estate plan, it doesn't have to be fancy. You can transfer directly. You can avoid wills. You can avoid probate by having PODs, pay on death, transfer on death, for just about anything, car titles, automobiles, I mean, real estate, just about anything at all, joint with rights of survivorship. I mean, there's so many ways to do the things that you want to do without making these big, crazy, crazy, crazy mistakes, because a lot of people make them, and some of them are reversible, and you can fix them, but a lot of them, you just simply can't. Hope that helped you a little bit. Hey, well, let's take another break. When we come back, we'll be talking about, I talked about this with Ed Slott, when he was on, about how to fund a super funded Roth IRA, and had the pleasure of speaking with one of the higher-ups over at Cook Group this week, and we had the same discussion, so it kind of motivated me to have this discussion with you. So if you have the ability to put after-tax contributions into your 401k at work, you may have a mega Roth on your hands. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. How to fund a super Roth IRA. That's pretty cool. We talked about this with Ed Slott a couple weeks ago, 16th of June, if I'm not mistaken. And then I saw an article from Kiplinger that came out this week. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to really explain this, because Ed will go through things quickly, conceptually, but never really get into the high weeds with these things. But if you were listening, like, how can I put 50, maybe 60,000 bucks away into a retirement account? I thought it was like 18 or 24. Well, here's the way it works. I mean, if your plan allows you to put after-tax contributions in, and a lot of them do, like the General Motors plan does, the Cook plan, as I mentioned earlier, does not, but there's a lot of them that do. So you can actually put up to, if you're over 50, 24 grand into the retirement plan. Then you can put another $24,000 into after-tax contributions. Now, why is that important? Well, in 2014, the IRS came out, and we used to assume that you could do it anyway, but not all plans would allow you. But in 2014, they came out and said after-tax contributions can now be rolled directly into a Roth IRA and avoid all the tricky tax issues. So you can effectively super fund a Roth IRA once you leave your employer. So if you think about it, that, you know, if you're trying to make $6,500 or $5,500 Roth contributions, you know, that's peanuts. But 20, you know, 24 grand, I mean, that's huge. Now, there is a maximum to what can go into a plan, period. So if you're 50 and older, you can actually put as much as $59,000 into the plan, into combined the regular 401k side and after-tax contributions. But these totals also have to include employee and company contributions. So if you have a match, that goes against the 59 grand that you can put in, and we expect this to continue to go up each and every year. So just, you know, keep that in mind. It's a great way, because at the end of the day, I'm sure that you're going to need tax diversification as much as you need investment diversification. Just like early in the show, we talked about doing shift, you know, taking money from different accounts and saving someone $7,000 a year of income taxes. When you're $1 trillion of debt and there's trillions of dollars in retirement accounts, guess where they love to go get that money from you? So what I would do is make sure that I have enough money in all kinds of accounts, tax deferred, tax free, you know, money that's in the bank that's in neither, and then be able to pick your distribution model to best favor your tax situation at the time, because we have a very uncertain tax situation down the road. I'm sure of that. So if all of your money is sitting in a pre-taxed 401k plan, you have no choices but to get in there and take out taxable money, and then you may be the one paying the load whenever it comes due. Hope everyone has a great weekend. It is my favorite holiday, the 4th of July holiday weekend. And if you're down on the south side of town, I mean, there's going to be a lot of firework displays. I think there's one at the Bloomington Speedway Friday night. Saturday, I know for sure there's one at my house because I'm going to be letting them off. And my neighbors have a big party around my fireworks display. So the other day, you know, we were talking about, you know, I'm getting everything ready. And tonight I'll be getting more things ready. But I guess last year, my neighbor, Bob, he's one of the people there at his party said, man, does David hire like a professional crew to let these off? Because, I mean, I've seen him on video. I've never actually seen him in person because my head's down lighting them off. And he said, oh, no. It's just David and a bunch of teenage boys out there letting them rip. So we're going to have a great time. And so if you're on the south side of Bloomington and you see a big firework display, it usually lasts between about 20 and 30 minutes because we always joke that all of us have just enough touch of attention deficit disorder that we want to grip it and rip it. Grand finale the entire time. You know, I've been to fireworks shows where I get bored, haven't you? Where it's like 2 hours into it and you're looking, boom, boom. I mean, I want them to go off. So we're going to celebrate Independence Day, go to the parade, do it upright. It's going to be a great, great weekend. Hopefully the weather holds off on Sunday and Monday. It sounds like it could be a little bit tough, but it looks like right now Saturday's going to be terrific. So we appreciate everybody listening. Again, you can catch us on iTunes now, as our good friend Jim Ritter is uploading those to iTunes. So we appreciate you hanging out with us. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a happy 4th of July, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.